At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
Dana was my boxing coach when I was a teenager. I remember sparring him. He was telling me, like, I want you to try and fucking kill him. And I was like, okay. So I connected with him clean as hard as I could with my right hand. He just was like, that's what I'm talking about. And then just started wiping me out.
Hey, I'm Rashad Evans, and I'm on Hot Boxing with
Mike Tyson and BJ fucking Baldwin. What's the deal, brother?
What's going on?
I don't know. We want to hear about your record-breaking stunts, man. Tell us. And we also want to know about your fancy artsmanship with the gun.
Oh, thank you.
Would you do that? Because I saw one time, I didn't mean to interrupt you,
That
Sammy Davis Jr. and Rob might notice when he's just sitting around with the gun and shooting, pow, 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 putting it back in, and you do all that stuff? Put it back in the holster, pull it out, you know?
Not really.
Not trickster. Okay.
Sammy Davis used to, like, mess with guns?
He's an expert gun shot.
Really? I didn't know that. I'll have to check that out. I've been in off-road racing, long-distance endurance racing in the desert for a little over 20 years now. I've got 7 series points championship. I'm the only person to win the Baja 1000 2 consecutive years and drive the entire distance.
How far was that?
It was really far.
Come on, give us a number.
Oh, man, it was 1,167 miles in 2012. I was in the car for 20 hours and 15 minutes. And then the following year, I think it was like 930 miles, and I was in the car for about 16 hours.
When I'm in the car that long, you know what happens? I catch this illness. What is it called again?
The sciatica.
Sciatica. I can't walk. Got to get an operation.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. No,
I'm in the seat that long. I got to get an operation. Isn't that crazy?
I get really tired. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is the mental fatigue, you know, because it's like one thing. We only... in the Baja 1000, you only get
one. How old is
the
Baja 1000?
1967 was, yeah. I think, its origination. But you only get to see this, the same corner one time as it relates to, like, other forms of racing. You do laps, and the Baja 1000 is one 1,000-mile lap. So you get one opportunity to do everything right.
But
perfectly.
It's so preeminent because they made stories like, remember Sammy Davis Jr. and Demo and did that one.
Yeah.
What was that show called? Something 500.
The Baja 500?
It was
I think they did do some racing back in the day.
And then there's a Wild Wild World, something to that effect. It was the same way. Every crazy person was on this race to get something or what it was. It was so long ago.
Now,
little
now
kid.
When you're doing those drives, how many people you got driving with you?
Well, I got my navigator. And then for most of the Baja 1000s that I've done, I've driven the entire distance. It's off-road race. There's about 300 cars and trucks and motorcycles. There's probably 40 of them in my class, in the unlimited class, which is the class that
you
goes
have any
first.
Great women drivers that participate into the race?
Yeah, there's a few good women drivers. Sarah Price is in the spec truck class. But yeah, it's super, super competitive. My truck is basically everything that you can put into something that looks like a truck and make it go really, really fast over really rough desert. Makes about 950 horsepower. Wow. It'll go through 3 and 4 foot bumps at 115 miles an hour.
So what makes the categories? You said yours is unlimited. So, like, what makes the different categories where they are?
Well, they'll have like a rule book for all these various classes. Like, we'll take, I think it's class 9. It's been so long. They'll have, or like a stock full truck. will have to have stock suspension arms, stock sized shocks, have to run stock frame rails, and then have to have like an engine that's similar to stock, and then everything else can be upgraded. So that rule book's like 25 pages of all the stuff that has to be put into that truck to make sure it qualifies.
How much does
the
truck cost, a real competitive truck?
About $850,000.
Really?
Yeah, my rule book is one page. It's got to have a factory production grill and have factory looking lights, but they're just stickers. Everything else is open. There's really not much.
What's the fatality rate with this stuff? Anybody ever died doing this?
Yeah, people die, you know, occasionally. At the Baja 1000, people get hurt all the time. A couple people die every year at the Baja 1000. It's pretty dangerous. I try not to die. It's not fun. I've been on fire 6 times. My navigator missed a note in 2015, and I was trying to pass somebody in the dust at 2 a.m, and I flew off a cliff into a rock the size of a school bus, and I was going 96 miles an hour on the road.
Dang.
And I got it slowed down to about 71, 72 miles an hour. I went from 70 miles an hour to zero in about 15 inches.
So before you do this whole thing, like you and your crews, you guys are out navigating the whole course and making sure you get every single little nuance. And
I can't even fathom what you just said to me just now. I was trying to think about what you told me, and I'm just thinking 15 inches. He's going to imagine.
Like a fatal car crash from like a regular production vehicle is like 33 miles an hour. You know, so if I didn't have my 5-point harnesses on, and then I have a head and neck restraint that keeps me from having basilar skull fracture, where the base of your brain breaks in your brain stem. If I didn't have that, I'd be dead at half that speed. So there's a lot of protective equipment, but you know, you're still.
Why you want to do stuff like that?
Holy shit. It's another dimension in motorsports. Like there's one thing, it's one thing to like go around a track and you have a bunch of people watching and it's on TV and you get, you know, 500 opportunities to hit this corner or that corner or whatnot. But when you have all of these elements that you can't control, like rock wall on the left and 100-foot cliff on the right, or a blind jump.
Different cliff.
Yeah, it's pretty, plus passing.
The 100-foot cliff.
You don't think about like passing in a desert race, you don't get to see much because there's explosive dust. You know, in front of you from the car that you're trying to chase down. So it definitely adds another dimension.
Peter, check this out. What made you say, hey, this is what I want to do? The first time you say, wow, I want to do this.
I always liked driving cars. You know, like I learned how to drive a car when I was 6 years old. I stole my sister's Corvette when I was 9 years old and drove it around the neighborhood for, you know, about 15, 20 minutes. I got in a little bit of trouble for that. But, I always liked racing, and I was really, really good on dirt bikes when I was a kid, and I got an opportunity to race with the Barbary Coast team in, like, a small limited production buggy, and then it just evolved into trophy truck racing.
How many trucks do you have?
Man, yeah, how about that?
I got...
Personally?
Personally? Well, I got a Dodge diesel... I've got Loki, which is a 1978 Chevy Blazer that's fully built out like a pre-runner, but it has a motor that's a lot smaller. It runs on pump gas. It makes about 600 horsepower. It's got lots and lots of wheel travel. I really enjoy driving that. And then I have 6 support trucks, 2 pre-runners, and 2 race trucks.
Now, the one that – see, I knew BJ for a while, Mike. Me and BJ go back for a while. And
how you know him, BJ?
I know them through mutual friends.
Yeah, Alan. Mutual friends.
That's one thing that sticks in my memory when those guys were like, they were like messing with you or something. What club was it? We were at Dre's or something like that.
Oh, yeah. No,
and I'm like, dude. Gosh. Isn't that terrifying? He was doing that to these guys in the elevator that were trying to get tough with him at Dre's at that monster party. And I was like, fuck, these guys have no idea. They didn't know who he was, and they were trying to get tough. I'm like, dude, he will vaporize you And then, thankfully, you had that bark, so you didn't have to do
bark
that.
At these niggas.
Huh? As soon as he barked at him, the guy pushed the button in the elevator, and the door closed.
Sorry,
like,
nigga.
Damn,
sorry,
I was.
I got so much trouble back. My wife and everybody told me, "Yo, why you use that word? Niggas cool to me." All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so I went riding with him one time, and it was an experience because it felt as if like we was completely out of control. But the way he would move and shift in the car, you knew he was in control. But there were some times you gotta ride with him. No, you gotta ride with him. You gotta ride with him. I'm telling you, it'd change you.
So I was talking to Rob about getting you in the truck, and he was saying that you're like, no, fuck that, I'm not going. And I tried to explain it, and maybe you can explain it better. When I get out of first gear and go into second gear, the fear is gone because of the stuff that you're hitting, and at the speed that you're hitting it, it goes well beyond fear, and you just start to try and comprehend, how is this happening, and why is this not breaking my back and jarring my teeth out, and how is it going this fast? So you don't stay in fear.
Sounds like more like Einstein than a truck driver.
Okay, listen.
I don't know. I can't follow this shit.
I mean, he had us on a side like a two wheels, and just the obstacles he was able to hit, get around, and like you know how like you got those old shit moments when you're driving. It seemed like he may have had those, but you wouldn't even be able to tell because he was just cool as a cucumber, just like moving.
That thing's slow, actually.
I'm
That's
scared of accidents and shit. I'm always saying praying before I get in the car to go home or getting on the plane or something.
Man, you gotta get in a car with BJ, man.
I gotta take you for riding the race truck someday because that compared crazy.
That's too much excitement for me, man. Bumps and ruining.
You'll go. Nah, I'll talk
to you. You don't even feel the bumps, though, do you? You don't really feel the bumps.
No bumps.
They got a shock suspension on the car that you just like. You feel like you're floating.
My shocks are like as tall as him, this big around. I've got six of them.
I can imagine. Remember they used to have those pickup trucks and they used to crash each other and all that stuff?
Yeah, was that for a commercial?
No, it was real stuff. It was a competition.
Oh, it was
the Derby.
The Derby.
The trucks hitting each other and running over. And one of them was named Monster. You know, they had names for this
stuff. Yeah, man.
So this will make you a little bit more comfortable. Like take like an average really big truck. I can T-bone that truck in my race truck at 70 miles an hour and back up and drive around it. There would not be any damage to my truck at all. That's how strong they are.
Now how many times were you driving? Like,
I might not
real?
Be that strong. I might get boom and fucking brain particles over here and over here. My brain shattered, my heart. I'll be fucked. Right, I don't know.
You'll be done. Now, how many times are you driving and you're on like one of these Baja races and you had like this, oh my God, I felt like that was almost it for me.
It's very, very rare. I like to make sure if I'm doing that, the juice is worth the squeeze. So if I have to make a certain
juice
amount of time.
Worth the squeeze. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, it's if I'm operating at 100% of my ability, that's not really fun for me. I would rather, you know, I like, and you could probably relate to this as it relates to fighting. I like to beat people that are really well known in embarrassing fashion. Like, that's fun. But being in, like, you know, a vehicular fist fight for 300 miles for several hours with one of the best guys in the world, and then beating their ass, that's not fun during the time that that's happening, because I have to take a substantial amount of risk. But afterwards, like that moment, you know, never leaves me, because I remember how much risk I took, what I got away with, you know, as it relates to calculated risk, and that I beat some of the best guys in the world.
You know, that's awesome. You're being an athlete and anticipating things. That sounds like you're juggling with your ego there, too.
Yeah.
So talk about your interest in it, though.
Interest in racing?
No, in the psychedelics. You said you were interested in doing the
DMT. You know, I've never done anything like that. And one of my sponsors in particular feels a certain way about marijuana and drugs in general. So I can either confirm or deny that I've ever done anything. But I hear and I believe that marijuana is a performance-enhancing drug in addition to being a recreation. I've done competitive jiu-jitsu. I did competitive jiu-jitsu for 15 years, and I trained with some of the really, really good fighters. I talked to you about that. But I would have never gotten my purple belt if it wasn't for, you know, some help from some stuff that you're involved in.
Yeah.
I never had a respectable relationship with my ego.
Yeah.
And to do that is just, man, it's like breathtaking.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to look into that. I've been thinking about it a lot this last year because I see Rogan talk about it. I've seen you talk about it with Rogan a bunch of times.
Yeah, wow. it's been a crazy year, but like throughout this whole year, just got your mind just thinking that, want to know.
Oh yeah, somebody tried to murder my girlfriend and I.
Disgusting. Talk about it. Yeah, he didn't talk about it. I want to talk about it. Let's discuss that.
No, we don't got to talk. I mean, just.
No, no, it doesn't bother me really at all.
Did you know the person?
I didn't know him. It was like a really strange thing. You know, we were in a parking lot getting some dinner, and two guys, like speed walking, you know, walked up on Tori and I, my girlfriend, and one of them had a gun pointed at Tori and didn't ask for money or anything, and started a gunfight, you know. Yeah. So, and of course, I've been doing, you know, defensive tactics and lethal force.
I forgot about this mother turned out really cool. I'm really sad and depressed over it that I forgot this nigga does. Yeah. This guy does this thing.
So, the dude was like, you know, really a big, big guy. He's probably an inch taller than me. He probably outweighed me by like 80 pounds. He's really excited about the opportunity to murder both of us. That's what kind of I got the impression from. He started shooting at, you know, Tori and me.
Time. He started shooting at you?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to let him get any closer to Tori. So, and he had the gun out the whole time, didn't make any demands or anything like that. And I assumed that he was going to engage her for whatever reason. And that's when stuff started popping off and we got in a gunfight. He shot at Tori twice, shot at me six times. And, you know, I shot him in the face from 25 yards away.
So you do a lot of the defensive tactic stuff and training and stuff like that. So how much of that was just like just training?
It
was very unfair. It was very unfair because, you know, I'm as far as I know, I'm one of two guys in the country that can draw a gun from concealment, engage a target 5 yards, and put four rounds on target in under a second. So I could draw and put four rounds on target in under a second.
Wow.
I do a lot of balance of speed and accuracy and very, very high level, high proficiency defensive tactics training from concealed carry with a pistol. So I'm really, really good with a handgun. My girlfriend Tori's got, I don't know, 20 world championship titles in competitive pistol shooting. So we do a lot of that. So for somebody to try and murder us with a handgun in a parking lot, I don't think that they saw that coming. It was really, really unfair for them, but I wasn't going to let them murder my girlfriend and myself. I was just out trying to have a hamburger, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I honestly don't feel one way or the other about it. I wish it never happened, but if it had to happen, like we were saying about talking to God, that's be the right question I would ask, because I didn't have any fear. I didn't have any anxiety. You know, I wasn't worried. I just saw a problem that needed to be solved, and that's not characteristic.
Objective about it.
Yeah, that's, you know, in my mind, it's almost like, you know, that was a part of a plan or some right type, because we were in a good part of town, you know, wasn't a lot of crime or anything in that part of town, and we were just having hamburgers. Somebody started shooting at Tori and I, and unfortunately for them, they picked a gunfight with two people that know a whole lot about gunfights.
So now, since that whole situation happened, I bet your training with the defensive tactics is a lot more, it's a lot different when you approach a situation. It's just not training anymore, right?
Yeah, it has changed me quite a bit. I've increased my proficiency with the firearm more than I ever thought I would. I've been studying ballistics for 9 months and testing all different types of ammunition, different bullets. I had bullets fail in that particular exchange, and they didn't perform how I thought they would have. I thought they'd be able to solve the problem a little bit better. Through this exchange, I didn't think I'd have to fire more than like two rounds to get this person to stop shooting. But I had to fire 10 rounds, which was very, very surprising. Bullet selection for somebody that's a concealed carry holder is super, super important. And it's not something a lot of people talk about or know a lot about. You want something like if somebody's trying to, like in our case, you know, somebody's trying to murder you for whatever reason, you'd want to have the tools and the fuel in your platform to solve the problem as quickly as possible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've learned a lot, and it's been kind of a crazy 10 months thinking about it.
Have you been able to like package that knowledge up and kind of like share it with people as far as like on a seminar basis point of view type of thing or what?
Not quite yet. There's still, I don't want to do that until I know everything that there is to know,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like, for example, one thing that nobody thinks about, velocity of a bullet. So I had a bullet that was supposed to perform very well. Velocity wasn't exceptional. It was very slow for a bullet. And, while I was being engaged and she was being engaged, there was a lot of movement taking place, and at 14 yards, my bullet didn't get there before the threat moved out of the way. So 7 to 10 inches off point of aim, point of impact at 970 feet per second velocity.
The guy took those bullets, huh?
Yeah, I got a little bit better bullets now. My bullets are for concealed carry, and for some of the people that I've gone to classes with and helped
educate. What's the name of your bullets?
Well, I got four different types.
What's the best one?
Depends on the application. So ideally, like
45.
That's too slow.
Oh.
ideally, you'd want something that can stop somebody that is trying to attack you or murder you or is presenting lethal force with the knowledge that that projectile is going to perform inside of a certain depth of a threat's tissue,
right,
and not exceed that. If you're exceeding that, not only are you wasting kinetic energy, but now that projectile has passed through that person. Well, who's behind them? They might not be somebody that's with them. It might be in a crowded place, so you don't ever want to accidentally strike somebody that's not involved, an innocent person or something like that. So a lot goes into bullet design to make sure that, you know, police officers use some pretty good stuff, but it's definitely not the best. So I've learned, done a lot of math up here as it relates to that.
Good shit, though, good shit.
Yeah, so that shows the specialties. You got the specialties with the driving, but just as much you're a specialist with the driving, you are with the firearms and the education that goes along with it.
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing with everything. Like, you know, you're world champion, I'm world champion. If you put that bandwidth into whatever else, like baking a cake, if you were really, like, fucked up on some shit, like, I want to make the best fucking cake, you know, in the world, and you dedicated 6 months on, like, baking that cake, your cake would be bomb.
Right.
You know, because you know how to get there because you're both already, you know, multi-time world champions. So it takes that mindset to get everything figured out and find every possible avenue to gain an advantage in performance. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. It's been a pretty interesting journey.
I'm just listening.
Yeah, that's what's up.
You'd be amazed what my neighbors don't hear. And I can neither can confirm or deny where my test facility is, but
right, you got to have a lot of land somewhere where you can just, you know.
You should.
I mean, I've seen
you guys now, right? Man, you shoot the gun, the bullets come out so fast, it looks like it's spray. It looks like mist.
Yeah.
You see those guys look like mess. Like a yeah. spray.
Yeah, Dylan M134, the one with the six barrels.
Yeah.
They're fun.
How many guns do you own? Because I've seen you have quite a collection.
Honestly, I haven't counted in a while. I've been building like pistols, just like modifying Glock pistols and building like a really, really high performing Glock pistols. I probably built like 5 or 6 of them in the last 10 months. Just
do you build them yourself?
Yeah, you start with the factory Glock and then do a bunch of grip modifications and select different barrel types and optics and light and laser combinations and all a
making a perfect gun,
stuff.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah,
very well tuned. Yeah,
I'm strictly I'm anti-gun, but I believe some assholes do need to be shot.
Yeah, I'm anti-gun too. That's why I carry a gun.
Some people, yeah. you can't help but to shoot them.
Nah, you're right about that, man.
I don't even believe I said that, but just in real life, it's just like that.
There's some people that are, you know, inherently evil, and then there's some people that are maybe psychologically wounded.
But I'm not going to let you wound me because you're psychologically
Yeah, hold off on that. Psychological wound type
fucked
shit.
Up.
Get
I'm
the
not
going to
let you
away.
Fuck me up.
Right, right.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
I'm curious. How many altercations do you think you've been in? In the last 10 years. Does anybody ever try and mess with you or anything?
Yeah, I get fight. Oh, what a life.
How does that go? Because I'm like, I'm always like, you know, like Dana was my boxing coach when I was a teenager, and then I got into jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. And I've sparred some people that, you know, are not
you said
great.
Dana White?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dana White. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you know that?
I did not. So he was your boxing. He was a boxing trainer, kickboxing trainer.
No, just like regular boxing.
Oh, boxing trainer.
Yeah,
boxing trainer.
Well, yeah. When I was 18, 19, 20.
How was
the
other trainer?
He had
how
hair
was
then,
that
right?
other trainer?
He had hair then, right?
Oh man, you remember like Tito and him were supposed to spar?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I like Tito, but Dana's got hands.
Oh,
she's got
Dana.
Hands.
Dana got hands.
Dana's got hands.
You know what? Dana strikes me as somebody who got hands because he's got a confidence with him like I wish a motherfucker would kind of confidence. You know what I'm saying?
He's got hands and he's got granite in his. I remember sparring him. I probably sparred him like, I don't know, 10 or 15 times. But I remember one time in particular, I was feeling like really feeling myself like I was like really crisp, really fast. You know, for just, you know, regular guy, because I've been training so much. And he would always just wipe me out when we would spar. He'd be nice, but then he would, you know, he'd bust me up
He'll spar with you, too?
Fucking oh,
Dana.
God, dude. He used to just
rip
me apart.
Undercover assassin. Let's check this shit. What else did Dana do to you?
I remember I caught him, like, slipping a certain way, you know, just caught, like, some behavior. And I knew where he was going to go when I was going to slip. And, you know, I wasn't a good boxer by any means or even mediocre, but I could hit really fucking hard, especially with my right hand. And I remember where I thought that he was going to try and slip to if I fainted, and I tagged him, like, as hard as I could with my – because he was telling me, like, I know you love me. Stop fucking around. You know, I want you to try and fucking kill him. And I was like,
okay. Go for it.
So I connected with him clean as hard as I could with my right hand – hard enough to where, like, my elbow hurt and, like, my shoulder hurt. I hit him because he was moving in at the same time. And he just was like, that's what I'm talking about, and then just started wiping me out. No, he's really tough. Really, really tough guy.
Wow, that's what's up, man. Go on with the rest of your story. I'm sorry.
That
Dana part just caught me just by surprise.
No, Dana's rad. So I've had a series of events from the time I was a teenager to when my son was born. So I've had death threats. I've been at a party where a fight broke out. I got shot at. I've had, you know, guns pulled on me and my friends. This is when I was younger. So I don't know, like, not many people have all that stuff happen, right, you know, to them. But I had always, you know, been a good shooter, and I got my concealed carry permit when I was 21, and I started, you know, training here and there. And then I had an event with my son where some guys were trying to run me off the road and yelling at me, a bunch of guys in this truck. I had no idea what it was about. And I was, you know, I was scared. I was like, what is this? What is going on? And I had, I was like, well, I'm BJ Baldwin. I'll just drive away. Like, nobody's going to catch me. And I was in a truck that had a big motor in it, and I was just going to rip through traffic and go through the desert and leave these guys. Well, I didn't have any gas. I had, like, no range left on the fuel gauge. And I was like, shit. Okay,
worse. Wow, man, this, like, is Charles Bronson and Dennis and Denzel Washington. Fucking equalizer.
Yeah. Motherfucking
equalizer. Real life equalizer.
Right, right. Walking the streets.
help me, please. Okay, man.
Oh, you're real making me blush, Mike. Shit.
Holy shit, the equalizer. We got a real life equalizer.
But yeah, in that instance, you know, I had my gun on my other car, and I had my son with me. He was a year old. I was taking him to lunch.
Then you got your fucking kid in danger. Arms, yeah, in danger, man.
I know. So I had no idea what this was about.
Does this shit always just come to you, like the danger shit? Just your, like, spidey senses? Like,
I don't know.
Danger.
I don't know. I wish it didn't. But yeah, I had my gun in my other car because I thought, I don't know what this was about. There's like four or five people in this car, and they were yelling, telling me they were going to kill me. It's like, damn, they're pretty upset. I ended up making it to this restaurant and running my son in. I, like, sprinted to the restaurant and ran my son in. They came in behind me, and I came out to deal with it. I gave my son to the hostess, and I came out to deal with it. And the guy was, like, super apologetic. He's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you had your son with you. And, you know, I was behind you, and there was a little rock that fell off, and it broke my windshield. And I'm sorry, I've had a really bad day, and I shouldn't have freaked out like that. And, but after that, you know, because, you know, in my younger days, I might have gotten out of the car, you know, and, right, and been like, yo, what's up? And tried to deal with it, and I could have gotten knocked out. My son would have been in there in my truck, exposed to, you know, the heat or something like that, and he could have gotten hurt. So I was just trying to get away. And then after that, I started doing a lot of defensive tactics training, and I never left home without my gun after that because of my kids. You know, it rattled around in my head, like, that could have gone way south. You could have, you know, they could have ran you off the road, killed your son or something. These people had me really, really concerned, and I was helpless. There's nothing I could do about it. I had no fuel. Usually I would just drive away.
Right.
You know,
right,
what, yeah, what asshole really, that asshole wants to run you off the road is going to catch a world champion driver? Like, who's going to knock you out in the club? Nobody. They punch you in the face, they'll die.
No, that's probably true, but I don't give them the chance to do it. I'm going to hit them first. They didn't even say anything disrespectful. Douche!
Get it before the beef start, right?
Beef!
Before they know. Oh, man.
Fucking Mike Tyson.
Do you remember going to Jet Nightclub in 2008?
Man, listen, let me tell you something.
This,
man,
is definitely something that would be good for the podcast. Listen,
those are my savage years.
Yeah. Those are your savage years?
Oh, yeah, me and my fucking... Hey, let me stop. that's pretty interesting. What's Jet? Jet was a nice club.
Did you go there a few times or just seven times?
Oh, I've lived there. That's my home. That's my living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in there.
That was mine, too. I knew, like, a bunch of people at the club. So that was... That's a really good story. I don't know if I ever told you the story.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it. I want to know.
This is fucking great. So my son's mother and I were having this crazy fight, you know, hell hath no scorn.
Right?
No, it was actually before. And I was eating dinner at Yellowtail at Bellagio with a couple of my friends. And these punks came up behind and they were like pushing people, you know, around, like through the crowd of Bellagio, like some bullies. Mm-hmm. And I was with two like really, really tough guys that were friends of mine, my buddy Jason and my buddy Dip. And I saw this happen and I was like, fuck, this is perfect. And I pointed them out to them because I was like, you know, these guys, if I kicked their fucking ass, it would be doing them a huge favor.
Right.
You know, if they got embarrassed, three of them got embarrassed by one guy, and I got my two buddies to back me up if, you know, if I have any problems.
Fucking equalizer, man.
Straight equalizer.
So I followed them over. I made sure they stayed like 20 yards back so it looked like I was all alone. And I followed these three guys across the overpass on Flamingo. And they picked up one of the, you know, the guy that plays the guitar for like a couple, some change.
Yeah.
So he picked up the guy's hat. One of them picked up the guy's hat and threw it into traffic. And I was like, oh, dude, I'm going to have so much fun.
Fucking Charles Bronson Death Wish. Go ahead.
So much fun with these guys. So I went down. I followed him, got a little closer. I went up the next escalator. Right, bro,
this is fucking Charles Bronson. I love this shit.
So I went up the next escalator, and I made sure I didn't – I got up close, and I made sure I didn't say anything while I was on the escalator because I just get stomped down the escalator. I'm, like, plotting all this shit out. So we get to the top of the escalator, and I says – with all the, three of these guys, and I says, I'm here. And they turn around and says, who the fuck are you? I said, I thought you were looking for me. And I said, who the fuck are you? I says, I'm Trouble. And then open – Dana taught me this. Like, don't ever, like, sucker punch anybody, but – open hand bitch slaps as hard as you fucking can are really effective, and they've proven to be so when I was when I was getting a little bit more confident. So I says, I'm here, and I hook the first guy and he goes flying, and then the next guy comes up to me, and I like palm his face as hard as I can, and then they're like, oh my god, this guy was, you know, is crazy, let's get the fuck out of here. Like, they've squared up to me for a minute, and then they ran off like little bitches. So after that, like, I was like, damn, I'm feeling pretty fucking tough. Like, I just bitch slapped the fuck out of three bullies on the strip. I walked to, with my buddies, I walked to Jet. I was already, like, really pissed off because of some stuff that was going on with my ex. And I see over on the dance floor, and we're like in shorts and flip flops, like barely getting in because we had friends at the door, and I'm like, fuck, dude, that's Mike Tyson. And my buddy Dib's like, what? And I'm like, dude, that's Mike right over there. Like, fucking look over there. And Jason's like, no way. I'm like, dude, I'm going over there. And you were with like 25 huge guys that look like the guys that you don't want to bump into on your way to the bathroom.
Those are the bouncers of the club. I don't know what the hell those guys are.
No, I knew all the bouncers at the club. I didn't recognize any of these guys. They're all just stacked in this table. And I'm like, dude, I'm going over there. Fuck this. I would never like go up and say hi to like any celebrity or anything like that. I don't know. But I was like, dude, I fucking have to go up and say hi to him, introduce myself to Mike, just say he's awesome or whatever. So they're like, don't fucking go over there. You're going to get your ass kicked. And these are two of my toughest friends. I was like, I don't fucking care. That'd be a good story. So I walked down the dance. They're like, I'm not going with you. You're on your own. And I went down there and I tapped you on your tricep. I was like, hey, Mike, just want to say I'm a huge fan. And you know, you're fucking awesome. And you started talking to me for like 5 minutes. You gave me a hug. Then my buddies came down and you were talking to them. You were talking to all of us for 5 minutes. I'm like, dude, you're fucking shit, you know, awesome. And I was going through like some weird boxing shit because I was drinking.
But Molly's and ecstasy was just working. Like,
and then I was like, dude, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And you shook, I was like, dude, I fucking love you. You shook my hand and you pulled me in and you go, I love you too, brother. And then you fucking were like super, super fucking rad. Made my whole night for sure.
That's cool, man. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
See, that's a good first story, man.
And there's no celebrity that I've ever seen that has gone through so many challenges and come back, and so many challenges come back. And so your journey through life, I don't think you realize how many people you inspire in a positive fashion. It's fucking badass, for sure.
I just know life is to be challenged. That's the purpose that we live in life, yeah. is to challenge life. And I'm ready for whatever life has to give to me, because I could take it good because I could give it good, too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now, that's what I tell some people that are looking for advice, you know, for me. I says, welcome challenges with open arms and a smile on your face. Absolutely. Welcome adversity.
There's nobody getting out of here free.
No.
We all going to deal with this pain before we die.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. 100%. I think that's a good note to leave it on. I think it's a good note to leave it on.
Do you have any children, man?
I got at least two.
To talk about it. You did a lot of fucking that one time.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. A lot of fun. No, I got two children. I got my daughter Zoe, my son Jaden. They're awesome. You know, it's two different moms. You know, like to spread love.
Are you married yet?
I'm separated. All right. But I got a wonderful girlfriend who's awesome. She takes very good care of me, and she teaches me how to shoot a little bit better. We have two different strengths in two different areas.
Styles and stuff.
So it's cool. It's really, really cool. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man.
It was an honor, really brother. It was super, super rad.
All right, this is Hot Boxing. I'm Rashad Evans. We had guest BJ Baldwin. And this is
Mike Tyson. I'm signing you off. And really, BJ, this has really been a pleasure speaking with you, really.
Thanks,
very
brother.
Mature, very sophisticated.
I appreciate
gentlemen.
It. Thank you.
We're out of here, guys. Thank you.